is Department of Labor and Industries.
May it please the court, my name is Derek Moore, attorney for Brandon Afella. Raymond Bishop, also attorney for Brandon Afella, is here, and Brandon Afella himself, as well as one of his caregivers, Matalateo, is here. This case arises from... I reserve 2 minutes time for rebuttal. And this case arises from an appeal from the Superior Court decision of the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals, affirming the department's denial of 8 hours of attendant care services. Mr. Afella and his family caregivers, they claim that he needs 24-hour care around the clock. The department only awarded 16. The second trial at issue was held in Superior Court, and the procedural dictates of the statute were followed, which prohibits the reading of live testimony. And in the trial in this matter, we had requested
the presentation of live witnesses.
So, is your constitutional challenge to that statute?
Yes, Your Honor. And under the analysis, the first question is, does Mr. Afella have a right to a jury trial?
And so your position is that statute violates the constitutional right to a jury trial?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Article 1, Section 21, the right to a jury trial is inviolate. And it's really pretty established that Mr. Afella does have jury trial rights in this situation. If you look at the Allison case, they reversed the...
What if the state had simply provided for an administrative process for Labor and Industries benefits with no judicial review except under the Administrative Procedure Act?
Well, that would have probably been unconstitutional, because if you look at the Dakers case, Dakers v. Oregon Railway, under the Byrd analysis, when challenging the constitutionality of a statute, you look at, you know, what cases were decided at law at the time the Constitution was enacted in 1889.
There was no industrial insurance right for fault-free benefits at that time, was there?
No, there was not. But if you look at the Dakers case, what they did is they established a new cause of action in derogation of the common law, and this involved a statutory scheme where for compensation of livestock owners.
So your argument, we would have to view the industrial insurance benefits as a new cause of action that could be pursued in the courts.
I wouldn't say a new cause of action. The legislature
had... Baker's case says?
Well, it did.
So if this isn't a new cause of action, how does that case help you?
Well, you can look at it either as a replacement of the remedy. Prior to the Industrial Insurance Act, the remedy was a tort suit and negligence against the employer. And, yes, the legislature did replace the negligence cause of action with the statutory recovery under the Industrial Insurance Act. And if you look at Dakers in that, they did a similar thing in Dakers by replacing the non-liability of a railroad for livestock with a statutory scheme. And the important thing about Dakers is the statutory scheme had provided for an appraisal process, a non-judicial determination of damages in the, for livestock lost. And the court said no. Damages, even where the legislature had modified the common law, as it did in Baker's and as it has done with the Industrial Insurance Act, in that case, damages are still the province of the jury. Fast forward 100 years later to the Sophie versus Fiberboard case.
We have a process now for supplemental or SSI benefits. Didn't exist. Do I have a right to a jury trial to my entitlement under Washington state law to SSI benefits?
Well, that's a different statute, and the...
Tell me why your analysis wouldn't apply equally there. You've got an administrative process and a right to judicial review. Why don't you have a right to a jury trial?
Well, because that is not a case that would be found to have had a sufficiently analogous cause of action under the common law at the time of the enaction of the Washington Constitution.
So is that the lens we should look through here, whether the industrial insurance benefits are sufficiently analogous to a tort action?
That's what the cases say, and that case has already been decided in Allison. Allison versus Department of Labor and Industries, 1965, you know, they accepted, the Supreme Court accepted that, yes, there is a right to a jury trial in board appeals. And in that case, they didn't look at the process, the prohibition against live testimony, but they reversed it on the basis of jury misconduct.
But the statute already created the jury trial right.
Well, there is a statutory right to a jury trial.
At the time Allison was decided, there already was a statutory right to a jury trial.
That is correct, as there is now.
So the court wasn't addressing that. It was addressing whether the right actually provided by statute had been implemented correctly.
The limited purpose of that appeal was whether or not there was juror misconduct. And in that case, they found that that there was, and that was and they reversed it on that basis.
So now, how does that case help you?
Well, it that just shows that it has been accepted, it's been established that there is a right to a jury trial. Now, the question from here is, you know, when a right has been established, then you, well, and again, it's damages. You look at Sophie versus Fiberboard, and there the legislature attempted to put a cap on damages, and that was reversed as a as unconstitutional for denying litigants an essential function of the jury. Then you look at what's happened here. This is in the briefing. It talks about credibility. The credibility was attacked, and that is one of the essential functions of the jury, to actually have a jury of your peers judge your credibility. And whenever an essential function of the jury is abrogated, then that does not fulfill the constitutional requirement for jury trial rights. And you look at the State Board of Medical Examiners versus Macy, 1916, State versus Demery, other cases cited in the brief. And so the question here is, you know, whether or not having someone's testimony at an administrative hearing read to a jury fulfills the requirement of a jury trial. And clearly, it does not, because the case law is clear that an essential jury function is the judgment of credibility.
You don't even weigh credibility without the presence of a live witness. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you can consent to it, and there are other circumstances, unavailability and so forth, which are discussed in the brief. But any party has a right to present live witness testimony to a jury.
You can't read through a transcript and make a determination about whether somebody's being truthful or untruthful.
Exactly. And that has been, there's been two challenges. It's been challenged and survived a due process challenge, as has a bench trial. But the process of denying somebody the right to his day in court to tell the jury so that the jury can assess his credibility, that's never been addressed. And under the cases, this is clearly does not fulfill the constitutional right to a jury trial that Mr. Afoa is entitled to.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the Court, my name is Paul Weideman, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Department of Labor and Industries. This Court should affirm the jury's verdict for three reasons. First, because the jurisdiction of superior courts in workers' compensation appeals is appellate jurisdiction, the legislature has the power to shape the scope of appellate review, including by limiting the material that superior court reviews to the record established at the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals. Second, under well-established precedent, there is no constitutional right to a jury trial in workers' compensation appeals. And third, because workers' compensation appeals are special proceedings under Civil Rule 81, there is no separation of powers violation by limiting review to the record below. Fundamental to this case is the question of appellate jurisdiction. The legislature has the power to define appellate review when superior courts have appellate review, and that's from Article 4, Section 6 of the Constitution. And here in workers' compensation appeals, that's exactly what the legislature has done. And the trial court exactly followed this procedure, as it does not appear to be disputed. The legislature did not have to give appellate review in this manner to the Superior Court, but it did out of policy concerns. It could have followed an APA analysis, as was previously pointed out. It could have allowed no judicial review, although in that case, aggrieved parties could still seek a writ to the courts. But here it did allow appellate review, and it allowed a de novo review, meaning it's an independent determination by the jury based on the evidence already presented at the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals.
Counsel suggests we should analogize this to a common law tort action. How do you respond to that?
That's incorrect, Your Honor, because under the Supreme Court's precedent and explanation of the Industrial Insurance Act in cases such as Lane, Putman, Clausen, all those cases discuss how the common law negligence action was removed for workers, and which was provided uncertain outcomes to workers, and instead in its place was established a statutory scheme for industrial insurance, which provided sure and certain benefits. So the
So that's a new scheme?
Yes, the Industrial Insurance Act is a new scheme from 1911. Not a new scheme, but it postdated the state constitution.
And it's a new solution to a problem that contributory negligence and the burden of proof in a tort action interfered with.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. And there is a lengthy discussion in Clausen about how that benefits workers because of the fact that many workers who were injured at work were injured through accidents and not negligence, and they had simply no cause of action they could assert. Now with the fault-free system of the Industrial Insurance Act, they have to prove they were injured in the scope of employment or suffered an occupational disease in the scope of employment. And once that's done, they receive a statutory benefit. So the analogy to damages is also incorrect under the negligence scheme in cases that counsel cited, including Sophie and medical malpractice cases. In those cases, first of all, their original actions in Superior Court, they're not appellate jurisdiction. But the jury does have to determine damages based on the evidence presented.
Those were also actions recognized in the common law.
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. So here the jurisdiction of the Superior Courts is appellate. And what the legislature decided when it enacted RCW 5152.115 was to enshrine the bedrock principle of appellate review, which is that on appellate review, no new evidence is presented at that level. It is simply a review of the evidence already presented to see whether the decision was correct or not.
We have a process that allows someone to move to supplement the record and exercise our discretion to do that. Is there any analogous right in a Superior Court review of a board decision?
Not exactly analogous, Your Honor, but the statute does allow the parties to move to introduce evidence when there's been a procedural irregularity at the board that's not evident from review of the record. So if something like that occurred, the parties could move to supplement the record and the trial court would have discretion whether to allow that or not. The jury trial right that Mr. Foa has is statutory, not constitutional. And as Your Honor pointed out, with the Allison case, the jury trial on-demand right from the Industrial Insurance Act predated Allison. It was from 1939. Allison is a 1965 case, and all that stands for is for the proposition that if there is a jury trial requested, it has to be a fair jury trial. And if it's unfair, if the jurors are biased against one of the parties, it doesn't follow the dictates of the Constitution. That does not mean there's a constitutional jury right under Article 1, Section 21.
Constitutional right or simply that the statutory right hasn't been provided?
It could also be that the statutory right has not been.
I mean, when it says you get a jury trial, we read in the word fair, don't we?
Yes. So either there hasn't been a statutory jury trial right or a constitutional jury trial right that has been followed in that case, but it does not mean that there is a jury trial right under Article 1, Section 27. And in fact,
it was a jury trial where you limit the jury's ability to determine credibility, a fair trial?
The The jury can assess credibility, and in fact, it doesn't have to observe the witnesses who actually testified in the case. The trial court here instructed on all the factors that the jury is supposed to consider when assessing credibility.
But part of assessing credibility is actually viewing somebody, isn't it?
That is part of it, Your Honor, observing
that they're not allowed to do that in this process. And why is that still a fair process then?
Well, because, for example, the Bufflin Woodworking case, where that was squarely addressed in the procedural due process context, the court held that that there are other ways to assess credibility. It's not just observing the demeanor. In fact, the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals in these cases makes the final decision, and it doesn't observe the demeanor of the witnesses. It simply reads the transcript. It looks at the sources of opinion of the witnesses.
That's not a jury trial. Here there's a statutory right to a jury trial.
Yes, Your Honor. And the jury can assess credibility without observing the witnesses.
Okay.
And instruction number one in this case and instruction number four actually give the jury guidance for all the things that they should consider when deciding what credibility and what weight to give the witnesses. And the Zavala case also discusses the fact that that is not an essential part of the credibility determination. It is a part of it, but the legislature has the scope to shape appellate procedures, and it has done so by limiting it to reading the record. On the separation of powers argument, again, because the legislature can shape appellate procedures, it can enact statutes regarding special proceedings. And the civil rules under Civil Rule 81A, civil rules will govern all civil proceedings except where inconsistent with rules or statutes applicable to special proceedings. And here the Putman case specifically explained that workers' compensation appeals are special proceedings because they are completely transformed by the legislature. And in that case, to the extent there is any inconsistency between the civil rules and the NRCW 5152115, it's the statute that controls. And Mr. Afoe's argument on this point is really limited to one particular civil rule, that's 43K, where he wanted or he requested that the jury be allowed to ask questions of one of his witnesses. The trial court has full discretion about whether to allow that, so there's not even necessarily an inconsistency. But if there is,
the court didn't exercise that discretion here. It just said that isn't permitted. And we make a distinction between reviewing an abuse of discretion when you exercise discretion and not recognizing that you have discretion to make a decision.
The court could make that distinction, and if it does make that distinction and say that that the trial court simply did not even allow that process to occur, then it would have to assess whether the statute governed or the civil rule governed. And because that would be new evidence allowing the jury to ask one of the witnesses questions that the board did not have the opportunity to consider, the statute would control in that case.
To implement that rule, you'd also have to have the witnesses present in the courtroom, wouldn't you?
That is correct.
In the typical L&I Superior Court trial I'm familiar with, except for the claimant, none of the witnesses are present.
That is correct. So there would have to be a process to bring the witnesses in if that was allowed by the trial court. Mr. Afoe received a jury trial in this case that is in accord with how jury trials have proceeded in workers' compensation appeals for the last 90 years. This court should not fundamentally transform that by finding a constitutional jury right, which has been rejected previously by the Supreme Court. This court should affirm.
What case are you referring to, previously rejected by the Supreme Court?
Your Honor, I'm referring to Clausen.
Well, that was police power.
Yes, but the argument was specifically made that the Industrial Insurance Act violated Article 1, Section 21 of the state constitution because there was no ability to seek compensation, and Clausen rejected that. And it was later affirmed by Mountain Timber and Floyd. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honors, to address Clausen and Mountain Timber, the question there was whether or not the entire act was unconstitutional. Clausen case, that did not involve an appeal from an injured worker. That involved whether or not the state had to pay for furniture to set up the department's office. And that was the analysis in Clausen was also followed by Mountain Timber. And the question there was, did removing the cause of action against the worker's employer violate jury trial rights. And the court said, no, because you've done away with the entire cause of action against the employer, and if you do away with the entire cause of action, then there is nothing left for the jury to be tried. And the Clausen concurrence actually talked about that. Someday, you know, a litigant will have a, you know, will request a jury trial under those circumstances. And both the majority and the concurrence said that Clausen did not speak to that. They only discussed due process rights. And all of the other cases through the ages talking about the affirmation of the act.
Not addressing the right to sue the employer when there's intentional harm and that there would be a jury trial there. That is the one cause of action that still exists for the worker.
Right, and that situation is not...
is that what they're talking about in those cases?
Well, they're talking about negligence. So you've removed negligence, and so there is nothing to be tried, at least with the cause of action of negligence. And
what do you think they're talking about that they're reserving for another day?
The question as to whether or not an injured worker has a right to a jury trial on the question of damages, which is here, and again, Dacre speaks to that, so does Sophie versus Fiberboard and several other cases, that the province of damages is one to which the jury right applies. And finally, with respect to jurisdiction being appellate, this is an appeal, not a jury trial. He doesn't testify here. The department has admitted what happened at Superior Court was not a jury trial.
Thank you.